Andrew Sullivan is entitled to write a book explaining himself. Sullivan is a political essayist, a blogger, a former editor of The New Republic. He is English by birth, Catholic by faith, gay, and conservative. His book is called The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, and How to Get It Back. Welcome to the program, Andrew Sullivan.
Thanks, Robert.
And if I have this right, you spend at least as many pages, perhaps more, explaining what you're not than explaining what you are. You are not, you say, a fundamentalist.
No, I'm a person of faith that actually believes that belief is something that you hold when no one is watching. My view about faith is that it's integral to doubt as well, and that without doubt you don't fully have faith. And the kind of religious certainty and absolutism that you see now across the world in all the major religions, Christianity, but particularly Islam, and even in Judaism in the Middle East, is a terrible poison for our political discourse and indeed for world peace. And I wanted to try in the book to say it's possible to oppose fundamentalism without opposing faith.
You write in your book that you have many friends who say you're not really a conservative. Let me join that group of your friends. I'm skeptical about where it is that you find yourself so conservative.
I believe in limited government, small government, low taxes, individual liberty, personal responsibility, balanced budgets, states' rights, and a leave-us-alone philosophy with respect to government. Now, not so long ago, that was Barry Goldwater's conservatism. It had a lot to do with Ronald Reagan's conservatism. It was Margaret Thatcher's conservatism. So I don't see why someone like me has to be written out of the conservative movement because of the principles of conservatism I haven't given up. I mean, here's a government that's spending 3,000 pork projects in a transportation bill, but it doesn't have the resources to tackle a hurricane. This is a government that's increased the debt owed to our next generation from $20 trillion to $43 trillion in 5 years, and yet it cannot secure our borders. I'm asking for a conservatism that gets back to basics, that gets back to understanding that we have to restrain government, not empower it, and that faith and politics need to be kept apart for the sake not only of politics, but also of religion, which is being poisoned by partisan politics.
You mentioned Barry Goldwater, and I went back to read some of his Conscience of a Conservative from 1960, which I read about 40 years ago. I read it then with great skepticism. And in that he wrote, "I have little interest in streamlining government or in making it more efficient, for I mean to reduce its size. I do not undertake to promote welfare, for I propose to extend freedom." However, as Barry Goldwater, in applying that conservative philosophy, later came to regret, that meant that he opposed the Civil Rights Act. That meant that he couldn't recognize a good worthy of very assertive government action. Isn't that a problem with a politics based on skepticism and doubt all the time?
It is. And sometimes there will be such great injustices that conservatives can and should violate their own principles. I think the legacy of slavery and segregation was one of those cases. I just don't think the conservatives are going to go there very quickly or easily. We tend to resist change. But yes, that is one of the weaknesses of the conservatism I'm arguing for. But also, I argue, the conservatism is also not rigid ideologically. It can adapt and be pragmatic. You know, Reagan raised taxes. Thatcher was a big believer in international law. Goldwater came to understand that certain principles of freedom might actually so violate the civil rights of certain Americans that it was worth giving up some of those freedoms to defend the people who were still suffering from the legacy of slavery. So I think you're absolutely right, Robert. There is a weakness in this politics. But right now, I think the balance needs to be brought back more to a politics of doubt, of empiricism, of skepticism, and of restraint. Because I fear also, in the global world we're at, if America comes to represent a religious fundamentalism, and we're fighting a war against another form of fundamentalism, Islamic, we are going to enter a religious war, the consequences of which will be very grave. And so we have to moderate ourselves and gain a little bit more humility in how we address our religious questions.
Apply a limited government, skeptical conservatism to the question, which you face as a gay man in America today, of same-sex marriage.
Well, here you have a situation, and Burke would have argued, that society is always changing, that social shifts occur, it's an organic process. The role of government is not to create a new utopia. It is not to create perfect social justice, but it is to adjust to changing circumstances. And over the last 20 or 30 years, obviously we all know that gay people have come out in greater numbers. They exist within our society. And so a conservative will ask, how do we best integrate these people into our society? How do we use our existing conservative institutions to embrace them? And hence my support for bringing in those people into the conservative institution of marriage. I also think that this should be done on a state-by-state level. The current Republican Party wanted to amend the federal constitution to ban it everywhere, to make no state able to make these decisions. Again, theirs was not the conservative position.
But to say that, I mean, it seems to me to minimize what a dramatic change in civilization, the notion of same-sex marriage is, that to say that it's a natural evolution over the past 30 years and that an 18th century parliamentarian, Edmund Burke, would have been sympathetic to accommodating the change, seems to be sidestepping the point that we just haven't had anything like same-sex marriage for thousands of years.
I don't see why conservatives can't reach out to gay people and say, look, this is our proposal. We understand it's going to be controversial, but let's do it slowly. Let's try it state by state. If it doesn't work in one state, then we can rethink it. But at the same time, we can't ignore the existence of gay people. They are a social fact, and a conservative is not going to just simply sit there and quote the Bible at them. He's going to try and have a productive and constructive policy towards them. Just as we change, for example, the issue of divorce in marriage, much more radical change affecting far more people. Conservatives are very pragmatic. They take the world as it is and they try to make the best of it. They don't come to the world with a fixed ideology and try and rig the facts and reality to fit that ideology. And that, to my mind, that latter philosophy is what typifies George W. Bush.
But your definition of conservatism would equally describe, say, the pragmatism, the problem-solving of a Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who ran on very different ideas, but once in office said, I have to solve the problem. We have millions and millions of people who are unemployed. We've got to do whatever it takes right now to address this problem. And not bringing a great ideology, he said that he barely understood Keynes when the two of them actually spoke once. He was simply trying to fix it, to get people back to work.
Yes, and in certain emergency situations like the Great Depression, the government may have to take radical efforts to do such a thing. But again, I still think that FDR's solution was probably a little too drastic than was required at the time. But yes, in crises, Lincoln, a great conservative, suspended habeas corpus for a while. There are emergency situations in which conservatives can be quite radical. But fundamentally, they are moderates, they are incrementalists, but they will always be concerned about the unintended consequences. They will always be concerned if you expand government, you have to reduce individual freedom. And basically, conservatives believe that people are best able to run their own lives rather than having a distant government run it for them.
Andrew Sullivan, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're very welcome, Robert.
Andrew Sullivan is the author of The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, and How to Get It Back. You can find a link to his blog, The Daily Dish, at our website, npr.org.